last time is talking about our need for good relationships, stable and stabilizing relationships. Stable because you can depend on them, they're going to be someone you can lean on, someone that is going to be a help and a blessing to you. Stabilizing is it's just so helpful to us and encouraging to us in our life when we have those kind of good relationships. If we don't have stable people and stabilizing relationships, we pretty quickly fall apart. So of course, we start off with our connection to our parents, especially mom at the very beginning and those primary caregivers at the very beginning of our lives. And so, you know, we ask ourselves, were those relationships stabilizing? Were those relationships stressful? Could you lean on the parent to be wise, to be stronger, to be mature? Did you have a healthy attachment to them? You can, you know, read all about that kind of attachment theory that I think is valuable to consider. Talk about parental imprinting, which is the whole idea of that our parents teach us what normal is. They teach us what's important. They teach us our values. They may not even say it, but they teach you about what they really value. And so if what your parents taught you about yourself is bad, if your parents taught you that you could get away with murder, well, sometimes people really get in trouble with their life because they live their whole life thinking they could just do what they want, that it's hard to shake off what your parents taught you about yourself. So to change what your parents taught you about yourself, if that feels like betrayal to your core values, that's hard. That's stressful, difficult, takes time. Even if your core values are that you're unlovable or worthless or should be ignored, or you can be a tyrant because you're the best thing under the sun, all those things, we struggle to grow out of that. So we talked about this concept of the 10 most significant relationships, and I can't figure out where the quote came from, but the emotional pool you're swimming in is the quality of the 10 most significant relationships you've had in your life. I think that goes hand in hand with the fact that we are always in some kind of emotional state, whether we realize it or not. So this is where we ended with the homework. What about our relationship with God? Because ideally, that's the goal, God is our most important relationship. He's number one, right? Ideally, God's the top relationship in our life, that we know he's stable. He should be stabilizing for us. Ideally, God is the most stable and stabilizing relationship we could have or ever have, right? But we have challenges with that, right? We face that. You can't just snap your fingers and make God your most significant heart-connected relationship. So the homework was just thinking through this question, just kind of your brainstorming and thinking about life and what it means to be a Christian and our relationship with God. At least four reasons why a relationship with God is not always number one, stabilizing relationship. Why it's hard to make God to be number one. What can keep us from making God to be our number one. What can keep that relationship from being stable and stabilizing, etc. So this is where I'd like to hear from you. What do you guys think? Why is it hard to make God? It is recording. Thank you. Good, good. Yeah. You are always welcome to remind me. Mumbling incoherently to myself up here. Yes. Okay. So why is it hard to make God my most stable and stabilizing number one relationship? Yes, Ryan.
Things in life could feel like more pressing or immediate concerns.
Okay. So just other things, right? Other pressing things. That sounds like Mark 4, the zealous seed that grows up fast, but it's in the rocky soil, and so the cares of this world drag it down and choke it out. Okay, good. Other thoughts?
You've not been taught how to do that.
Okay, not taught. We can maybe say not modeled well, right? I would say same thing. Not taught. Not modeled. Good. Yes.
Not having a consistent or regular prayer life.
Okay.
Letting yourself get behind on your prayer life.
Prayer life, not consistent, or we could even say not consistent or strong. Yeah. Good. Absolutely. And as we know, this is like what we teach little kids, but you know, in prayer, we are communicating to God. We're letting his word speak to us. You know, that's kind of the only relationship in my life that's like that. Because most other people I talk to, or we talk and we both talk, there's no one that I write them emails and then they, you know, like some other time will speak back to me. You know what I mean? That's not typical. Yeah, Jason.
I think that it can be challenging not having the physical part of
Absolutely.
The relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, that may not be what we want to admit, but I think that's a human nature thing.
He's not tangible, right? So you can give me a hug, you can shake my hand, you can be there. Our kids love that. Kids need that. And God's not going to give me a hug, right?
Well, I can keep in mind your first relationship, the one you just talked about with your parents, your mom. I mean, that's what it's first bound on, is that physical
is very, it
touch.
Begins, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yep. You know, talking about with newborns, skin on skin, just letting those babies feel you close, all that. Dixon.
I think too much focus on ourselves, on myself.
Good. Any other thoughts with that?
Yeah, I think that's a broad thing, but a whole lot of the others, that's kind of the umbrella. Then a whole lot of the rest of the things that I wrote down fit underneath that broader statement.
Because it is a relationship, right? A relationship is a two-way street. Well, if I'm being selfish in the relationship, or I'm not really open to what God has to say, if it's not, then it's not a real relationship, right?
In our assignment that you gave us, you know, I was a little surprised but agreed when the video that we were to watch.
Yep, co.
Narcissism.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, again, obviously the same thing, focus on ourselves. And we're going to lead us in a lot of paths, including away from God, but a lot of paths that are not healthy and productive.
Okay, good. And, going along with this, one thing that maybe is too obvious to even say, but I think it's very real, is it's just hard, right? It's just hard to grow in that relationship, that it's a lifelong journey. You can't snap your fingers and make it. Really, any relationship is hard, but then the relationship with God is challenging. So it's going to take time, and we grow in that. We grow in our faith and grow in our love and all those things. Lots of hands. Okay, Betsy.
Well, James 1:25, not being a doer, and then you'll forget what you've even learned.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you don't use it, you're going to lose it.
Okay, not a doer. Very good. And I'm forgetting. So not a doer. I'm going to put James 1 there. You know, we forget. I hope we have time in this quarter to talk about confirmation bias, because that's actually a very important concept for us. We forget the things that we kind of don't want to face. That's what we do. We remember the things that we like to think about, you know, and so that's part of confirmation bias, is what you even remember or forget. Now, before I move on, that God's not tangible. A wonderful passage that I think hits on this very point for us is Psalm 131, which is, we'll cover that late. Wait, is that, that's for Sunday, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. It's for Sunday. Okay, so you'll, God willing, you'll read that this week, because that's part of the homework. I have the homework printed out, Dixon, so that should be ready. I just forgot that was going to be there. Okay, Kendra.
Well, I think one is like maybe jealousy or feeling left out. Like maybe you see someone has, you know, more than you, and it's like, well, why didn't God give me that too?
Okay, I see. Yes. Okay, so
comparison, maybe another word.
Yep. So, and I think maybe where you're going with that is we end up kind of blaming God. We feel distant from God because things aren't how I'd like them to be. So, yeah. That seems like where that's going. Maybe not. Katie.
Similar to not tangible, we can't see him, and it's really easy to prioritize the people and things that are physically in front of us every day.
Yes. Probably having a screen addiction won't help that, right? Because I'm visually driven. Yeah, Jason.
Well, I was going to add to that. I think, let's just thinking about our day and age now versus when I grew up, the screen addiction creates a instant gratification type of mentality. Whereas like when my grandparents grew up, maybe books were more how they would read. And I mean, that's the things they would do. Now it's not, because books take too long. We don't have time to read. We want to watch a 30-second
SpongeBob
video.
Yeah.
and be entertained by that,
yeah.
and then move to the next one,
yes.
and watch 100 of those in 2 minutes, and, you know, just constantly. And I think that really, Satan is really doing a good job of pulling us away from a very different mentality, which is to read and focus and meditate and think quietly,
yes.
more so than being entertained by something instantaneous. So I think that's a real problem,
yes.
that we can struggle with, not just younger generation, but all of us.
Yes, I agree. Okay, Tom, then Eric?
The simple one, we're just lazy.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Just hard, we're lazy.
You identify with that one?
What's that?
Nothing. Does he identify with that?
No, yeah. It's just, it is challenging. It's easier to read my Bible for just information than a relationship, right? It's easy to pray and it not be in the context of faith in a relationship with God. So those things are difficult. Okay, Eric and Terry?
Along with, I think what Kendra said, just an improper view of God, if you either see him as vindictive or permissive or inattentive or aloof or something like that. And I think part of that can happen by globalizing our thinking as we observe the world, and instead of interpreting it through the lens of scripture.
Okay, good. I like your globalization reference. Okay. That's good. That's one of our one big cognitive distortion that's kind of probably useful to think about at least a little bit. Wrong understanding of God. And that may be something that the church I grew up in did. That may be something my parents did. You name it. But it could just be that my understanding of God and the gospel is wrong. And I think that's huge for us. Yeah, Terry?
My comment kind of ties in a little bit with his, that depending on the background of the person, if you're a trauma survivor, then sometimes trauma survivors deal with a lot of guilt and shame for whatever happened in their past. And so that interferes with their ability to have a stable relationship
yes.
with God all the time.
Yes.
And so that's there's a fear and sometimes even anger towards God for, you know, why did you allow this to happen? That sort of
thing. Absolutely. Yes.
So all of that has to be worked through
yes.
in order to get to a place of stabilization.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So when we see it like that, of okay, that person is coming from a rough background, we see, oh, they struggle to keep good relationships, right? They're constantly burning bridges, you know, there's always an issue with them and someone at church, blah, blah, blah. Well, if that's the way they are with them, the people, might we suspect that that's then going to be true with their relationship with God, that that's not what it should be, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, yes, Laura.
Just our choices that we make, being too busy.
Yep.
Doing's good, but if we're overbooked and we don't have time for God.
Yeah, good. Good, Ryan?
Going through school and even then after that entering the workforce has made me think about this a lot, and that's who you surround yourself with.
Mm.
Do they pull you away from? You
okay. Know? Okay, yeah, so I'll just say my friends and those relationships. Because if I hung out with people all the time that, I'm trying to think, this sounds ridiculous, but like they made fun of my wife, they talked bad about my wife, is that gonna help my wife relationship? Like that's such a weird illustration, but you know what I mean? It's like, well, if people in my life love God, talk about God, that's gonna be helpful versus people who God doesn't enter their thinking at all. They're not helping me to be more God-focused. Good. Jerry, then Dixon.
I think sometimes we just, and this kind of encompasses several of these, but we just don't have the commitment. And we know if we have that relationship, we're going to be held accountable, and we don't want that accountability.
Okay, yeah. Well, so, and that ties in with, we feel far from God. Sometimes we feel far from God because of really hard things that have happened to us. Sometimes we feel far from God because of choices I've made, you know? And the guy who keeps falling into lust, but he never makes it right with God. Well, no matter, he keeps falling into it because he's not coming back to God. You know, that kind of idea. Who did I say was next?
Dixon,
then Nancy, then Kendra, and then that's it. And I want to keep calling you Monica, so if I do, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Probably not the first time, right? Okay, yes.
Well, in following in that lines of friends, but I think another thing that, that can often keep us from doing that, if we have an unbelieving spouse, that, again, so that goes both ways, not husband or wife, but that can really affect our focus. If, again, if there's wisdom in that, and in a similar sense, we can put too much focus on our children and like, see situations where that happens, which takes, we put them above all other things, maybe even above the spouse, but above God, the relationship with God as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So so your closest of friends, your kids, that hopefully, the ideal would be that your spouse helps you as a Christian, your kids help you as a Christian, but instead sometimes we choose our kids instead of God. And really, when we're thinking about those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 key relationships, you can say, oh, wow, they're really prioritizing being their kid's friend or getting a, wanting peace in the house, blah, blah, blah. And they put those things and God's now way down, you know. And to be honest, if that's the kind of choices they're making, probably the relationship with God isn't even really on the top 10 of the impactful relationships kinds of things. Okay, yeah, Nancy?
I'll yield to Kendra.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't know how to say this in a few words, but like, will God ever forgive me?
Okay.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah.
Not understanding like how much Jesus can actually do. And I was listening to a podcast about grief a long time ago. And of course, they can't name every scenario, but one of the examples that was given, I mean, maybe this guy knows someone like this, but someone wondering, like, well, you know, they aborted their child before they were a Christian. It's like, will God ever forgive me
yeah.
for that? And the answer is yes.
Yes.
And I'm not permitting it at all, but yes, God can absolutely forgive that.
Yes.
As hard as it is to really believe that.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So that's, sounds like that shame and that fear and isolation and all that, that that makes that so hard. So, you know, here's some of my thoughts with it. It's just hard. Prayer is hard. Bible study is hard. It's way easier to talk to a friend. It's way easier to turn on a movie. Relationship building with God is difficult. Making time for it is a challenge. It's indirect, right? You can't reach out and touch God. You can't talk face to face with him. If you're Moses, you got to talk face to face with him. But that's none of us, right? You can get a hug from God. I turn to other people or things more or turn them first. A lot of habits that get in the way. So here's just a, you know, a verse thought for us. I will say to the Lord, my refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I trust. That person is seeking God to be that stable and stabilizing relationship. I'm going to make you my refuge, right? That's stable, fortress in whom I trust. Other thoughts. It takes time to grow, like Mark 4 talks about. I love this line from "'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, how I've proved him o'er and o'er." You know, we just grow. The longer I live, the more I've seen God help me, the more I've seen God do amazing things, you know. The Apostle Paul even talks about growing. And so if Paul, in the middle of his third missionary journey, I mean, he's done a lot of things as a Christian at this point. He says of his life, "We were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself, indeed we felt we'd received the sentence of death." That God had said, this is where you're going to die. "But that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead." So those hard things, Paul thought, we're going to die. Beyond our strength, we despaired. But Paul says, you know what? That taught me to rely on God all the more. So we just have room to grow in that, right? I would love to be as strong someday as Paul was at the beginning of his third missionary journey before he'd had this. And Paul grew beyond that too, right? So that idea. This kind of aligns with what some have said. It takes time to recalibrate the other relationships in my life to make room for God. You know, to really make God number one means I'm going to have to choose what God wants, not what that person wants. That's hard. That takes time. Galatians 1:10, that verse there, that's what says, if I'm trying to be a man pleaser, I'm not a servant of Christ, right? If I'm a servant of Christ, I'm trying to please him more than anyone else. Okay, a suffering makes me feel far from God, right? The psalmist in Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from me? Why are you so far from the words of my groaning? My God, I cry to you by day, you don't answer. By night, I find no rest. Does he feel close to God or far from God? Is he a person of faith? Yes, but in his suffering, he just feels far from God. That's going to happen, right? And so we keep our faith. We keep coming back to God. and we use this as a model for doing that. But when he suffered, God, why aren't you there, right? Why have you forsaken me? Well, you know, David, he hasn't actually forsaken you, you know, and I wish you, you know, got the picture so I wouldn't have to come over and teach you that. No, that's the model here for us, when we feel that, to cry out to God. So even the faithful righteous in the Bible struggle to feel close to God in their suffering. My sin might make me feel far from God, right? Just like mistreating someone doesn't make you feel close to them, you know, feel good. Hard to look them in the eye if you, you know, yelled at them yesterday, whatever. Well, sinning against God doesn't make us feel very close to him either. It brings us far away. I don't think anyone said this. When I'm young, my God relationship, that should just be a single S, my God relationship will be like my parent relationship, right? That whole thing we talked about. I'm going to learn to think about God like my parents. Well, that might not be a good start. So, Jake, you gave this lesson like 6 years ago. No, it was COVID, so it was like 5 years ago, about the guy who said God calling himself a father is not a very good PR move, right? So that idea of like, if you didn't have a good relationship with your dad and the preacher knocks on your door and says, I want you to know that God is your father, you're like, no thanks, you know, because you don't want that, right? God's my father, who wants that? So if that's your relationship with God, starting off at a pretty rocky start, you have to grow in that, right? I may struggle to break away from my parents' conception of God or break away from that parental relationship, right? Jesus said, Luke 14, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother and wife and children, brothers and sisters, his own life, he cannot be his disciple. Does that mean actually you hate them? No, obviously we love them. We lay down our life for them. But in comparison, God has to be, you know, we serve him above all else. Eric, I think, was the one who went down this road. I may have been taught and then embraced a theology about God that makes it really difficult to get close to him, right? That may have been the culture at home or my church or just how I read things, you know. It could be the preaching was just fine growing up, but I, because of my baggage in my home, misread that, right? A perfectionist mindset where you kind of feel like everything depends on me. I hope that our study of Romans last quarter taught us, nope, everything doesn't depend on you, right? God's the one who blesses and helps and gives the increase and brings us through. So instead of learning to love God and find peace and hope in him, religion actually put God far from my heart. This is a favorite verse of mine. I love this verse. Romans 15:13, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, in your faith in him, so that by the power of God, right, the power of the Holy Spirit, you may abound in hope. You may not have been raised in a home or a church or whatever that really said he's a God of hope. It might have been a hopeless picture. Now, the preacher never stood up and said, it's hopeless. You know, why have a relationship with God? Because you're probably not going to get to heaven anyways. No, the preacher's not going to say that, but that might have been the unstated kind of assumption there with that. Okay. So those are the last of my slides. We'll take one more comment, then we're going to move on.
Sorry, but I wanted to jump on that because I think that this is probably a space not so much in the preaching, but maybe one more closer to home with us as parents,
mm-hmm.
or as we've seen parents specifically in the church, where we have to be very careful as parents that we don't create this image, because our kids are probably going to learn more about God from us than
yes.
they are from the preaching they hear three times a week, if they're, you know, here three times a week. So that's, we just have to be careful that we're teaching them correctly. Now, doesn't mean we won't make mistakes, but we have to be able to say, I made a mistake, right? Otherwise, the kids are just gonna, they're gonna have this poor perception, and I think, you know, a lot of cases, those kids end up not, they lose their religion, they lose their faith in God when they get up and start to make their own decisions.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, that humility is parents, because it's a relationship. Good. Just relationships and our need for those. So moving forward, just talking about relationships and our well-being. Proverbs 15:4, a gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. What does this teach us about human nature, how God made us, and relationships? A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Right.
Maybe it's not exactly what I'm thinking of, but the second part makes me think of, like, you turn on the news and it's nothing but, you know, tragedy. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't mean, you meant actual tragedies.
Yeah, it's nothing but, you know, tragedy. If we fill our intake with that, then we're going to feel pretty bad.
Okay.
Like, we're not going to feel like a tree of life is sustaining us.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you were going, you turn on TV and all of it is just anger, rancor, you know, just mudslinging, right?
That too.
So that would be a perverseness that is not encouraging, right?
I read that more as the tone rather than the message. So the message may be hard, but the way that a person approaches a situation in a gentle and understanding and loving way is very different than the one who approaches it harshly and demanding and is crushing of the spirit.
Yeah, and a meanness with it. Yeah. Yeah. So we can really impact others with what we say and how we say it, right? And the power of the gentle tongue is amazing. It's a tree of life, right? Very helpful, very motivating, encouraging, but a meanness in it, you know, so just a world of difference, breaking the spirit versus being a tree of life. Okay, so close relationships inevitably affect our emotions. I hope that we're kind of seeing this. Our emotions are going to be tied to relationships. So that's why we need good relationships. The closer the relationship, the more power that relationship has over your emotions. See, that kind of just follows with what we've been talking about. If it's someone you've never met before and you meet them for the first time, their ability to turn your life upside down is not very likely. But it's your spouse, it's your kids, you know, things with God, things with your mentor, you name it. The closer that relationship, the more power it's going to have over your emotions. And God just made us that way. Zechariah 2:8, that's where God says of his people, he who touches you is like touching the apple of my eye. Like, God feels close to his people, right? So from a biochemical perspective, oxytocin is the bonding hormone in our brain that connects us to people, and it's especially strong with our spouse and with our kids. And so we feel that bond. God put that bond in us to feel very close to them and therefore very affected, right? It's going to take a while if your spouse dies. It's going to take a while if your spouse goes through something really hard. Vasopressin is works alongside oxytocin, connects to pair bonding and protective behavior, more so with males. That's the, like, hey, my kid, like, you know, like, protect my house kind of, you know, a territorial thing. Okay, so the goal in marriage then of that closest of friendship, right, is to complement each other, not complete each other. I like that terminology. I'm not saying it's the best terminology in the world, but that idea of you're trying to be a blessing to each other, you are a person with a relationship with God and in your life, and you're coming together with someone else to be in a blessed relationship, but not for that other person to complete you, right? This is the obvious VBS answer. Who's the person that should complete us? Right, God, exactly, right? God needs to be the one who completes us. Is this easy? No. Can you fall into some of these things without even realizing it? Yes, clearly, right? But we learn for God to be that completing us. So we put our burdens on his shoulders. We're trying our best for God to be our burden bearer, right? That he has big shoulders, he can help us, and not be expecting things of our spouse that may be impossible for that. We need to grow for God to be my greatest stability, not my spouse to be my greatest stability. That's the goal. That's kind of what I'm aiming towards. You can't snap your fingers and make it that way, but that's what Christ would have us to grow in. So marriages are going to work best with two stable individuals who come together to bless each other. Now, that's the ideal. Are we perfect in that? No, we're not perfect in that. We're working on that. But that's the basic idea, is that we're working for God to be relationship number one that is stabilizing me and leaning on my spouse in good ways, but reasonable ways, not unreasonable, unhealthy kind of ways. So as we talk about all this, one of the things for us to examine in ourselves, if we're facing anxiety or depression or addiction or shame, that is just as we are talking about these topics, is the struggle, you name it, fill in the blank struggle, revealing a need for better attachment to others, right? And you may say, well, duh, obviously, because what I went through growing up, this happened or whatever. Yeah, I've got some pretty rotten attachments, right? But maybe it's not so obvious to see that. Now, what I wanted to do is for that to be more on our radar. Oh, that person has severe anxiety. I wonder how their relationships are. And maybe you were savvy enough and wise enough before today to have that on your radar. But most of us don't think that way. Oh, anxiety is a personal thing that has nothing to do with relationships. No, it has a lot to do with relationships. Take this quote. One OCD or depression guy in the PIP, he said, I need a grandpa to help me through this. Why do you think he said, when he was in the midst of the PIP needing encouragement and help, why do you think he said he needed a grandpa? What does that kind of evoke?
Grandpas are more fun.
Oh, sorry. Grandpas are
more fun. Yeah, they're more fun.
He needed a fun person.
Not judgmental.
Okay, I think that may be more along the line. Yes.
The verse we just talked about in Proverbs.
Okay.
A gentle tongue, a soothing tongue.
Okay, good. What else kind of would you think of with a grandpa helping you through hard things?
Wisdom
and
experience
and stable and calm. And loves you, right? That whole thing. And maybe you're like, yeah, I need a grandpa to help me through that. As we get older, grandpas are hard to come by, right? So that idea of someone who can be stable and like you said, non-judgmental, and I'm ashamed of all these things. I need someone who still loves me and who's wise and calm and all those things. So, is this problem I'm facing, does it reveal a need for better relationships? Does it reveal a need for better attachment to others? So just some areas for self-examination along these lines. If the emotional pool we're swimming in is defined by my top 10 life relationships, right, people present or past, how have my relationships been? It's just a good question to ask ourselves. Maybe an easier question. Do I have a person you can easily call in the middle of the night to help in an emergency? Because if you don't have that, what if you have an emergency in the middle of the night? And dads maybe don't think about this as much as moms, but moms are gonna be like, what's gonna happen? If we have to rush to the hospital and we've got the 2-year-old and the 9-month-old, what are we gonna do, right? Do you have a person you can easily call?
Drown yourself. And that's what I do. Drown myself.
Well, good. No, that's good. Obviously you're thinking, well, a church family should be there. Well, they should be, but is that really the case? Yeah, Betsy.
My mind went right to parent child relationships. Mm-hmm. If your child, a teenager or who, whatever age, cannot come to you and confess their faults without you falling apart,
yep,
there's going to be problems.
Yes. Whew. So it could be falling apart because they just can't handle it. It could be anger. They're going to blow up, right?
Exactly.
There's a guy I'm talking to who desperately needs to make life choices, but he doesn't want his mom to find out about the pornography problem. He says that she can't handle that. Well, she's not being the adult then. She needs to be able to be the adult there. Do you have a person you can go to when dealing with sin, with struggles, with marriage trouble, that's gonna encourage you, not make you feel worse afterwards, right? Here's the common sense. The common sense is just, the more isolated we are from others, the more prone we're gonna be to anxiety and depression. That just kind of makes sense. Of course, we'll be anxious and depressed if we feel alone. So to have real relationships that are helpful, encouraging, et cetera, is really our goal. So as we've talked about this, it's not just that we have these three separate parts, mind, body, relationships, biopsychosocial. I think what we're seeing pretty clearly is that the components are very intertwined, right? They're really intertwined, so much so that the big Harvard study said, you want to live happy and healthy, have good relationships. Well, I didn't know that it would help me in that way, right? The three components are very intertwined. We saw that with emotions and the heart. How do you really say emotions are just your mind, not your body, your body, not your mind. It's really both, right? And your heart, that inner man, who you are. So the point is not to parse out exactly what's mind, exactly what's body or relationship, or what's spiritual in and out of that, right? The point is to see how interconnected and interdependent they all are. Okay, so here's just a funny thing to think about. I mean, kind of funny, it's just interesting. How can we help each other's brains? Music also seems to have the ability to increase oxytocin levels, that's the bonding, especially when people sing in a group. Isn't that interesting? Sing in a group with people, you're gonna feel more bonded to them, which adds the element of bonding. Just a simple act of touch seems to boost oxytocin release. So, you know, I know, I'm not saying we have to go back to first century holy kissing. I'm really not. But I think we need some holy hugging and, you know, some brotherly affection, you know, along those lines. Okay. One of the key, as we're talking about this, and getting ourselves set up for future things down in the quarter, one of the key concepts for growth in mental health is this. We change our thinking when we change our actions. And one of the best ways to change our thinking is to act differently. So that's a helpful concept for us to see moving forward. God has just made us to where we change our thinking by what we do. What I do comes back and helps my thinking. If you're doing good things, that should help us think better. So as we see, that's going to be a huge blessing as we try to help our thinking when our thinker isn't working too good, right? You're in a really bad place and you're not thinking so good. Well, let's keep doing the right thing and that's going to really help, right? Of course, it could be a curse because if you're making bad decisions, that's going to be changing how you think in the wrong direction. The decisions I make, including what I do with my body or my brain, will help my brain and my thinking and my emotions. Those decisions really help. So a surefire way to change your thinking is to change your behaviors and even make different choices inside your head that no one can see. That just it doesn't have to be with your body, although the body helps a lot of the time. Sometimes even the choices you make in your head, I'm going to make a different decision, a different thought, I'm going to make a different choice, going to circle back and help our thinking. We change our thinking when we change our actions. Okay. Well, here's what we've all been waiting for since, you know, our first class, right? So now it's time to add the spiritual component to all of this. So we've talked about the mind-body connection. We have talked about, okay, so mind and body and relationships. We've added relationships into the mix, how God's made us. So now we need to incorporate the spiritual as well. So the first, I think, key question for this. Is the spiritual side a different component entirely, or is the spiritual side integrated into the bio and the psycho and the social? Okay, so any votes that you think that when we talk about the spiritual, it's a different component altogether, like a different bubble. Any votes on that? Wow, okay. Any votes that it's really integrated into our minds and our bodies and our relationships? There, okay. Any votes that it's both? You're allowed to change you can change your vote.
It's the foundation.
Okay, the foundation, okay. So the spiritual side of us is a separate thing, I believe that, but practically, I think in terms of, you know, working on my life, practically, it's really about how that's integrated into my thinking and into my emotions and into my relationships, etc. And so practically, I think what we'll see is it's mostly about integrating it into my body, emotions, my thinking, my relationships, as an integrated piece. God's way works. That's what we're going to see. God's way works. God's way is going to be a blessing and a help to us. Godly thinking helps. God's power in my life helps. Godly relationships help. God's word helps. Godly leadership helps. All those things, right, is the integrating that into who I am. Now, the fact is there are active spiritual forces at work in our lives. And I think we miss this because we're so scientific and want to measure it under a microscope or in a test tube or something. The fact of the matter is, God's at work in our bodies and in our minds and in our hearts and in our relationships. We see that all over the scriptures. We'll see that in a second. Satan is at work in people too, right? Satan's at work in the world in all those ways. Satan is at work in people's minds and bodies and hearts and relationships, right? Ephesians 2:2, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, right? Satan, we know it. We see it every day. Satan is at work in people's lives, but so is God, which is good. So just some classic verses that emphasize this point. Acts 16:14, one who heard us was a woman named Lydia from the city of Thyatira, a seller of purple goods. The Lord opened her heart to pay attention to what was said by Paul. 1 Corinthians 15:10, by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace towards me was not in vain. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is with me. 2 Corinthians 8:16, but thanks be to God who put into the heart of Titus the same earnest care and love I have for you. Hebrews 13:20, now may the God of peace equip you with everything good that you may do his will, working in us that which is pleasing in his sight through Jesus Christ. So, we can pretty easily think of ways that the Bible, God's help, God's ways, God's people dramatically help us, right? They dramatically help our thinking, dramatically help me and my body and my emotions, dramatically help my relationship. Now, we don't have time for this exercise, so we'll probably do it. Dixon is taking class on Sundays. We'll probably do this next Wednesday. But just, we're going to take time and say, real quick, what are some ways that the Bible, God's help, God's ways, God's people, help my body, help my thinking, help my relationships, right? That's the idea there. So we'll do that. I'm going to skip down to the homework so we can talk about that before we go. And there's a worksheet, and Ryan has them in his hand, and he will pass them around. Okay, so the homework is just along these lines, looking at the biopsychosocial spiritual. So there's four passages on there for you to consider. And by passages, I'm stretching that word a little bit. I've got several Jeremiah passages, Jeremiah complaint passages. And look at that. What gets Jeremiah down in the pit? How does he get through the despair, the challenges he faces? Psalm 142, relationship with God versus relationship with people. Eric and I were talking about that psalm earlier this week. Psalm 131, look for biopsychosocial spiritual elements, Psalm 131. Psalm 18, biopsychosocial spiritual elements. And, I'm giving you multiple passages there. So you'll want to allow some time to get through that. Help Dixon out by being prepared, right? And so that's what you'll do on Sunday with Dixon is look at Jeremiah and as much of the Psalms as you can. Do you think you'll start, Dixon, with 142? We had talked about that. Dixon may start class. Dixon may start class with 142 and then go back to Jeremiah, but it doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all that, of course, is free game, and to look at that. And that worksheet is pretty bare bones. It's just kind of giving you those passages and having you dig into those passages. So, okay, any questions on the homework?
So yes. I volunteer in school usually at Wednesdays, work with third graders. That third grade class is up on the second floor. Well, this kid dropped his tiles we're working through down to the bottom floor. He told me my arm didn't do it. My brain didn't tell me to drop that. It was my arm that did it. And I said, well, your arm, your brain, and your body are going to be in trouble. So that's the whole
thing. Yeah, the whole thing. Yes. So. Yes, very good. Very good. My arm did it. Yep.
He's trouble. That one is.
Yes, very good.